For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Pitch. Swing and a long drive, deep left, way back, gone!
Hey everybody, welcome to another Baseball America podcast. I'm Kyle Glazer, joined today by JJ Cooper. JJ, we have officially reached mid-season of the minor leagues. All-star games all across the lower levels, at least, have taken place. You were just in South Bend, Indiana for the Midwest League All-Star Game. I was just in San Bernardino, California for the California League All-Star Game. Kind of an interesting demarcation point for us here at BA. We're getting ready to roll out our midseason top prospect update. We're going to see a lot of changes, a lot of guys graduating, a lot of new guys moving in. But one of the fun things about going to the All-Star Games is seeing a lot of the best players on the field at the same time. And while it is an All-Star Game, you never want to go crazy over one thing you see there in kind of an exhibition environment. This is also a time where you see some guys start to pop up. I know every year I go to an All-Star Game, someone who you haven't heard of does something well, and then a month later I see him get moved in a trade. I feel like it happens every year. So it is informative and instructive. JJ, the Midwest League is obviously, you know, really, for a lot of the guys there, this is their first foray into full-season ball. Mm-hmm. They've shown they can handle it by making the All-Star Game, particularly in the Midwest League where it's very, very cold early on. What for you were the biggest takeaways from your experience up in South Bend, both in terms of the individual players and kind of larger themes?
The big thing that stood out probably more than anything was, so last year I was at the South Atlantic League All-Star Game, and one of the things that really stood out was just how terrible the pitching was at that game. Like, and it wasn't, I mean, not just me saying it, but in talking to scouts that were there, you know, look, it's not all about velocity. I'm not trying to make it sound like it is, but it is partly about velocity. If you give me two guys and everything else is equal and one of them throws 88 and one of them throws 98, give me the guy who throws 98. And last year, there were very few guys 95 or above. And so I was kind of interested to see, you know, last 2 years, Carolina League game I saw 2 years ago, similar story, you know, and the Midwest League All-Star Game, that was not a problem at all. There was a whole lot of velo. Probably, I haven't counted everyone, but probably nine pitchers who were 95 or above.
Wow.
Braylon Marquez touched 100. He was not the most impressive pitcher there. When you talk about, you know, guys kind of, you see a guy who you really, you know, didn't know that much about or weren't, you know, wasn't on your radar that much. Eric Marinez with the A's is the guy for me. Converted position player, his first year really as a pitcher, and he was filthy. I mean, he came in, bottom of the eighth inning, three batters, three strikeouts. He was 96, 97, but it was this, I would describe it without getting a chance to talk to him afterwards to ask it, but what I would describe as a split change, maybe just a splitter, but it was like 90 miles an hour, and also threw, I mean, and hitters had no chance against it. And just stood out as like a guy who, okay, that's a good arm. And he had some, you know, a little bit of feel for, again, a guy new to pitching. Obviously was not the only guy there who really stood out. But it was like, overall, the pitching was really impressive. Another thing that stood out was the Marlins. You know, the Marlins have, again, the Marlins fans, there's not been a whole lot to hope for in a long time. And I'm not going to tell you that this Midwest League All-Star roster changes all that. I mean, I know it's still a tough time to be a Marlins fan. They're clearly the worst team in their division, and there's no clear path for them to be, like, there's no real scenario where you say, okay, I could see in 2021 them being the best in that division.
This is going to be, when we talked about this when I did my rebuilds package for BA here a couple of years ago, when you strip something down to the level the Marlins do, it is a minimum, and I mean a minimum, 5 years, really the fifth season after the teardown, 4 years, five seasons is really the absolute earliest you can expect any success. So considering they really completed the teardown with the trade of Real Muto this past year, it's going to be 2024 before they're good again as a team. But we've seen they can still start to bring up some young guys and have some talent in that system, which they haven't had for a while. Who were the best Marlins guys out there for you?
The guy who stands out, their right fielder, Gerard Encarnacion, who, you know, again, there is a long way between the Midwest League and the big leagues for him, but you are talking about a hitter with significant physicality present. Like, you're not asking to project there. Like, you're just saying, right now, you've got it. And then on top of that, you have, like, he showed easy oppo power. Now, a frustration, no infield, no BP, no chance to see these guys do anything as a hitter or as a position player, except for what they did in the game. So it was a more limited look than you'd normally get to see. That said, easy oppo power, you know, got the bump up to, I believe, to high A after the game, but has shown some power in the Midwest League in the first half this year. Something there. Chris Vallemont started the game for I guess that would be the West All-Stars, I believe, and 91-92, but with solid, you know, feel, a good ability to kind of mix pitches. Humberto Mejia was interesting. The translation is they had multiple guys who you're like, oh, okay, there may be something there. And I say that because I go to a lot of low class A All-Star games. There have not been many Marlins I can say that about last year or the year before or the year before that. So that's one of the things that stood out. And the last one to me that really did jump out was just, it's not the first year for this to happen. I think the Eastern League did it for the first time in 2015. But the tie All-Star game that gets settled by a home run derby was something that the fans loved, the players enjoyed, and I can say on social media, there is nothing on social media that you put out there that everyone approves of, but it seems like the home run derby to finish an All-Star game instead of a tie is the one where everyone's like, yeah, that makes sense to me. Because, again, we're not talking about, that game was not going another three innings. They did not have the pitching to do it. They settled it within 5 minutes. It was interesting. It was both, you know, like, I mean, it was something you don't normally get to see. You had both teams kind of out there in foul territory watching this. And when Chris Betts starts hitting, needing two home runs only to win it in 90 seconds, but he pops up and he doesn't connect with like the first six pitches. And the opposing team they start going crazy. They're like trying to get in his head. It was a situation unlike you see in almost any baseball game ever. It was cool. It was fun. Everyone enjoyed it. And I would say yay to the home run derby to settle a tie All-Star game.
It certainly does make for an entertaining finish, much more so than a tie. There were a lot of really, really impressive prospects in this game, particularly in middle infielders. You have Xavier Edwards, the Padres system, Bryce Terang with the Brewers. We obviously have Wander Franco, the new number one prospect in baseball, Blaze Alexander, who's a nice middle infielder in the Diamondbacks system. I do want to start with Franco. You saw him go 0-for-3 with two strikeouts, and it's interesting because, again, it's an All-Star game. You never want to go crazy about anything. But it's notable because one of the signature selling points for Wander Franco is he not only doesn't strike out, he rarely swings and misses. You had an article about that earlier this year where he went.
Had one last year, too, because in the Appy League it was true, too, yeah.
Which is funny because when I went up and saw him in the Appy League, I saw him swing and miss and strike out, and apparently you go and you see him swing and strike out.
We're a curse.
Yeah, I mean, you never want to go crazy. It's an All-Star game. Anything at all you can take from that?
I'll say, like, the things that stood out to me, you know, which none of it's surprising because he's really, really good. But, yes, I know he struck out, and that's surprising. That said, the bat speed. The really one of the things that stood out was the ability to make like late decisions and really to foul this, to spoil a pitch. Like he has the ability to seemingly like, okay, he's letting that one go, and then like to flick his hands and, okay, you know what, I'm protecting the zone on that one, I'm gonna get the next one, which I can't get over. He's 18. The other thing that stands out, and talk to some people about this, Chris Betts, who was the, you know, the star of the, you know, the 2 days, the home run derby and the winning the home run derby to win the game. But he's a teammate, you know, they're Bowling Green, they're teammates at Bowling Green, and him just talking about what an impressive teammate Wander Franco is. And we saw that, like, at the home run derby, Wander Franco wasn't in the home run derby, but he was living and dying with every swing that Chris Betts had. And talking to Betts afterwards, he said, like, that's not different than, like, if anyone on our team does something good during a game, Wander Franco is going to be one of the ones, you know, leading the celebration of it. Like, it's not just all about him. He's an 18-year-old who's got kind of leadership skills too, which that's one of the things that's always enjoyable to see at these kind of things is he has a confidence about him, you know, that is unusual for someone that age. Again, he's there with a lot of guys who are a lot older than him, and he fits in. He does not seem like the young guy trying to figure out how to handle it. That's not a problem at all. Just stood out, really impressive. You know, again, it was a good event. South Bend did a very good job. They sold that place out basically for the All-Star game, which is, you know, it's something that you see done, but it's not always done by any stretch of the imagination. Really good crowd there both days with the home run derby and the game, you know. But so that was the one I got to see. Got to see, you know, South Bend. So you are just back. You got to be a little more jet lagged than I am, but you just got back from California. So what did you see at the Cal? What stood out from the Cal League All-Star game?
Yeah, so I wrote about this, that it really was a pitcher-dominant game from the North perspective. But in terms of individual players, the two guys that really jumped out to me, and also as the scouts of the event, you know, who we were talking throughout, Elliot Ramos with the Giants. This was someone that was on our top 100 going into his first full season, had fallen off of it, struggled a little bit with Augusta last year. But you talk to scouts who were seeing him in the South Atlantic League, and they still saw the tools. It was just a very young kid. He was young for the draft class, coming from Puerto Rico, really just trying to get everything in sync. We've seen him this year in the Cal League. And again, before you say Hitters League, he's in San Jose. He's playing in the North Division, which are all pitcher's parks. Which, not only really neutral,
by
the
way,
are pitcher's parks.
And do remember when we say Cal League also, we've taken one of the greatest hitter's parks in baseball and removed it from the league for a couple years now, too.
Beyond just that, Bakersfield was third. It went High Desert, Lancaster, Bakersfield. So two of the top three are gone. Matt Eddy here at Baseball America actually had a mid-season park factors update. You can check it out online now. And six of the eight Cal League stadiums lean pitcher-friendly now. So especially in the North Division.
It used to be the PCL and the Cal League were like in a whole different world, and now, by the way, the PCL and the IL are in a whole different world.
The Carolina League blows the Cal League away now in terms of hitter-friendly parks.
And because they've added some parks.
So, but going back to Ramos, just in the All-Star game, you saw bat speed, there's physicality, and he's moving really well. He's a bigger, thicker guy. He doesn't look like he should be able to play center field, but he had a ball straight back, you know, very tough play for a center fielder. Went back, leapt at the warning track, made the catch, slammed into the wall. So you just see all the things. You see physicality, you see youth, you see tools both offensively and defensively. You see a good athlete. He's someone who definitely stood out from that game. On the pitching side, Ryan Rawlinson just looks the part of the lefty you want to see. Fastball both sides of the plate. Really the slider. He's able to backfoot his slider to right-handed hitters, which is so key for a lefty. And again, college guy, but you know he's exactly where he should be. He started
at the midpoint of your first full pro season.
Yeah, he's handled himself very well pitching in Lancaster. Which, while we say you know the Cal League is not the hitters league it used to be, Lancaster still is one of the single most hitter-friendly parks in all of minor league baseball.
Absolutely.
All things considered, a 4.23 ERA pitching your home games in Lancaster—that's great. He's done a really good job just in that context. And again, when you look for, you know, a big league looking lefty, you know, you can just kind of say, yeah, this is absolutely a guy that you take in the back of the first round and you see the components to succeed there. So those are the two guys who are kind of main prospect name guys. Unfortunately, a lot of the best prospects were not in this game. Joey Bart was not in the game because he's been hurt. Jared Kelenic and Logan Gilbert were midseason promotions. They did not participate because they hadn't played in the league very long. Luis Patino was snubbed from the All-Star team. I don't get why or how, but he was. Mackenzie Gore didn't pitch. So a lot of the big-name prospects did not participate. But there was one guy who I had heard his name. So I was out in the Cal League for a week before this, and I had heard his name start being bandied about by some managers, some coaches. Oliver Ortega in the Angels system. And I'd seen the numbers, and hey, he's pitching pretty well. And I heard when I was out there someone say, yeah, he's up to 98. I was like, really? This is not someone who was on the Angels top 30. This is not someone who was ever really in a prospect discussion prior to this. Well, he comes out in the All-Star game, 95-98, with a hammer power breaking ball. He's landing four strikes in the zone. Got two quick strikeouts. Again, just one inning of work. It was eye-popping. We've talked a lot about the Angels have really improved their farm system. You remember me coming back from opening week Cal League last year. I was like, guys, Griffin Canning is a monster. And oh, by the way, this chubby lefty named Jose Suarez is really good too. A year later, they're in the majors. They've been two of the Angels' best starters. You know, Ortega, it's a more of a reliever delivery, and people do expect that to be the ultimate outcome. But it's another good arm in this Angels system. He was probably the quote-unquote under-the-radar guy that I came out of that game thinking like, hey, this is someone that, you know, we need to start paying attention to. But the best guy I saw all week. So I did the Cal League All-Star game, but I was out there the week before sitting on a series between Ranch Cucamonga and Lake Elsinore. Now, when I say best guy, I saw Mackenzie Gore. He is the best guy. Let's get that out of the way. But the guy beyond him that was really, really eye-opening was Josiah Gray.
You know I'm a fan.
This was that Friday night game, Ranch Cucamonga, Lake Elsinore, Josiah Gray versus Mackenzie Gore. Big matchup. A lot of scouts came in. A lot of scouts were there for the series, but some extra guys came in to watch this matchup. Josiah Gray, 93-96, held 95 miles an hour into the seventh inning. It's the type of fastball you can live on. You can ride a fastball up to the majors. It had life. It had movement. Swing and miss. Threw it for strikes. Both sides of the plate. Held the velocity, just really impressive to see. Again, he's a Division II, cold weather, only started pitching full-time last year, and he's already got a fastball. You can see riding him to the major leagues. And he snapped off some sliders, too, that were really impressive. Not 100% consistency, but he snapped off one or two. It's like, yeah, that's a 55-60 grade slider. So you have a plus fastball, above average to plus breaking ball. Changeup still needs work, but that'll come. You see a fastball you can live on, potential for a really good breaking ball, athleticism, durability, and just the competitiveness. When I talked to him after the game, you know, he and his manager talked about a primetime matchup with one of the best prospects in baseball. That's the moment he lives for. So even if the chain of development stalls and he ends up in the bullpen, okay, well, if it's 93-96 as a starter, what, 96-99 in the bullpen with a slider and that competitive fire to be a high leverage guy. Either way this goes, the Dodgers have themselves a really good pitching prospect.
Yeah, I mean, and, you know, there's a reason to think that there's more to come, more than the average college pitcher his age, because of the background. I mean, this was a shortstop who dabbled in pitching until really last year. So it's a fresh arm. He's athletic. Again, D2 guy who's done good, done very well.
From upstate New York, I mean, cold weather, there's a lot to dream on. This is not a guy who has peaked in any way, shape, or form, which is exciting. You know, Jeter Downs saw when I saw him. Esturi Ruiz, I saw Elsinore for three or four games in April. And, you know, when it's an April look, it's like, okay, this is where they are. It's always important to see what they look like a few months later, what the improvements made are. Esther Ruiz looks a lot better. You wanted to see certain improvements made over these 2 months. He's made it. He had a long home run in the All-Star game, turned on a pitch up and in, kind of almost at his eyes, and sent it long way to left field.
Is that a good thing or a bad? It's a debatable point.
You know, and that was the thing with him.
It's an All-Star game.
Plate discipline early did not look good, even in the context of a 20-year-old playing in the Cal League. But you wanted to see improvements made, and you saw them throughout that 4 or 5 game series with Rancho Cucamonga. There's always been power there. No one's doubted that. There's really, really fantastic base running instincts. He looked really good. Again, the improvements you wanted to see made were made. You know, Luis Camposano, when I was there in April, of all those position players at Elsinore, Esther Ruiz, Tristan Ornelas, Gabriel Arias, that everyone loved to talk about, it's like, Camposano's the best of those guys. That was pretty clear in April. It's like, okay, you know, let's see how, and the season unfolds, and looks like it's staying that way, and you go back in June, and I wrote about him, like, yeah, I mean, those guys are all talented. This isn't to say they aren't good, but Camposano's a cut above, and that's, the coaches see it, the scouts see it. I mean, that's...
He was a dude coming out, you know,
first catcher drafted in his draft class. So I think those are the biggest takeaways for me. The All-Star game itself, Elliot Ramos and Ryan Rollison. In terms of individual players, you know, Josiah Gray, Luis Camposano, Mackenzie Gore obviously did what Mackenzie Gore does. We saw
him. I was going to say, but let's not, you know, so Mackenzie Gore did what Mackenzie Gore does. But what, you know, what stood out to you? Because people want to... We can't tease them with Mackenzie Gore. Like, we talked Wander Franco. We need to talk a little bit of Mackenzie Gore.
Sure. So my second time seeing him, I also saw him in April and wrote about him then. You can see that article on Baseball America. Just such a really, really good athlete. The high leg kick. But what he does is he gets such tremendous extension. His fastball's 91 to 96. It'll sit. First time out I saw him, it was sitting more 3-4. Sometimes it'll sit more 2-3, but... The fastball plays up because, as one scout put it, it's a 53-foot fastball. He gets so much extension, it gets on the hitter so quickly. You know, they think they're on it, and they're swinging. The ball's already behind them. So it's a fastball that really plays, has some life. Curveball is slider, and I'd heard this many times, that some days his curveball is better, sometimes his slider's better. First outing I saw, the curveball was better. This last outing, the slider was better. They each will, you know, show you the velocity and shape and snap to be plus pitches. Changeup, he doesn't throw it all that often, but when it's right, it's another plus pitch, and there's all the control and command you could want. Well, I say that, you know, it was interesting. He had 3 no-hit innings, 9 up, 9 down, and then he actually walked the bases loaded to start the fourth, and again, it's just a blip. You know, there are certain moments where fastball command, I don't want to say loses it, but it goes down a tick, but that happens to every pitcher alive, where, hey, there's an inning for whatever reason, they lose their feel for something, and watch the major leagues. It happens at every level, and, you know, bases loaded, no outs. He worked out of it, got a strikeout, a sac fly, and another strikeout. So he's got all the stuff to succeed. He's got the composure to succeed. He's got the assassin's mentality, as one evaluator put it, to succeed, that all true front-of-the-rotation pitchers have. You know, this was someone that a lot of people thought in the 2017 draft was the most talented player in that draft, even though he did not go number one overall.
Often is not the case that they do. I mean, again, especially for a high school guy.
High school pitcher especially. Mm-hmm. And going down last year in Fort Wayne, even though the blister issues happened, the numbers didn't look great, everyone you talked to said, you know what, it's still there. It just, the blisters really affected him, but you saw it. And this year in the Cal, it's been dominant. Again, just...
Yeah, we have a piece Josh Norris did in the, they'll be up at baseballamerica.com real soon. This is also in the issue that we just sent to press, talking about, you know, that there's this group of, it's really a pitching dominated top of our prospect list now. And which is in recent years unusual.
And it's interesting you mentioned the top of our list, because we've talked about Franco, we talked about Gore. I know I've had this conversation with a bunch of scouts, and also going around and watching, just, you know, doing our jobs and seeing as much baseball as we're seeing. There's no question the quality of play in the minor leagues has taken a step back, and it's pretty noticeable. Like, other scouts talked about it, and like, even I can see it. You know, this last week, and I saw some really, really, really ugly defense, even for high A standards. And I can't tell you, I mean, every single scout call I have ends with, the minors are rough right now.
And there's just less talent. Like, I mean, right now, it is not every top 100 is created equal. And if you said, would you rather have 2 years ago top 100 than this year's, 2 years ago, last year's?
And that's one of the interesting developments. Again, we've talked about this within our office, and just peeling the curtain back here for our listeners. I feel like this year it's harder to come up with 100 top 100 guys than it has been in past years. And talking to evaluators around the game, they're seeing the same thing of, you know, hey, we've got this top group, but the top group now wouldn't have been the top group 3 years ago. And whereas before, you know, you could get to 60 or 70 before you thought you were starting to make some stretches. Now it feels like you're starting to make some stretches at 40 or 50. And, you know, I've asked, okay, why is this? Because you see it, we see it. Clearly there's something up here. The only thing that differentiates is the theory behind it. Some will point to guys are getting moved up to the majors faster than ever.
I'd push back on that one because back then it was Jose Tabata who got promoted quickly. So, like, I would argue there's no actual reason to it. It's just that there's not a standard, like...
You see it as a natural ebb and flow.
There always have been. You know, we had a stretch a while back. I mean, like, this is at least the third trough we've had in my time at Baseball America where, like, the reality is that more, I would say as much as anything also, we're comparing to, we've said, like, the top five coming into this year, the top five coming into last year
Acuna,
were
Ohtani,
exceptional.
Tatis, like, Vladdy Guerrero, Eloy Jimenez.
They're exceptional. And so you don't have that every year. Now, we are right now at a mechanical trough of prospects because we have graduated the Eloy Jimenez, Fernando Tatis Jr., the top of this list that we had before the season. And it'll be July is when we'll work in the draftees, and July 2, but they're not. But you know, you'll work those in. So from that standpoint, we've graduated without replacing yet. So like from the mechanics of it, we're at the point right now where we don't get to talk about Adley Rutschman and what he's doing in the minors yet because he's not in the minors yet. But we don't get to talk about Eloy Jimenez or Fernando Tatis either because they're in the majors and they've graduated. So we are in that. But I mean, beyond that, there just are times. Like the other part of it is that we are, like, if you said, I would say in general, I think you agree with me. Like, I know for me, I feel more comfortable about our list when it's hitters. Like when we talked about going into, let's just say last year, because I thought last year was really exceptional. It's like, okay, we think Acuna, Ohtani, and Guerrero are all just like
franchise caliber superstars.
Yes. And they were all, again, in Ohtani's case, he did both, but they were all hitters. Now, in Ohtani's case, he also pitched. This year, we talked about coming into the year. We're like, you know, it's hard to feel much better than when you've got Guerrero, Tatis, and Eloy Jimenez leading the way. And by the way, we've also got guys like Nick Senzel and also that are right behind them. Okay, all these hitters. Right now, when we talk about the most interesting guys in the minors, a lot of them are, it's like, okay, well, you know, Mackenzie Gore is really good. And Casey Mize looked really good. Okay, now he's on the IL. Yeah. Jesus Luzardo looks really good, but he's just back from the IL.
Nate Pearson, who has had injury problems before, although some of it was more freak of
Nate. But right, but Nate still, like, things, Nate Pearson, who's throwing two innings an outing every other outing right now. So Forrest Whitley came into the year great, you know, and then had a disaster of a first half. And so the reality of it is that, yeah, there's more risk when, I mean, we both love Mackenzie Gore, but if you're asking me to, what's my certainty level over Eloy Jimenez or Mackenzie Gore, you know, which were you more certain is going to have a long, successful career? Well, I'm going to go with the hitter every time because there's so many fewer things that can derail them.
We've seen time and time again, the pitchers, just the risk factor is exponentially more significant. And that's where this gets tricky. I will say, look, you look at the top of the list, Wander Franco, excellent. Joe Adell, excellent. Mackenzie Gore, excellent. There are still some premium guys, but it is fair to say that top three doesn't match the top three of 2 years ago. It's interesting. Some of it's going to be ebb and flow. Some of it, there's a kernel of truth, but we've got a half season left, and this is where a lot of guys develop and get better, so we'll see what happens. But JJ, thank you for joining us. We're going to bring on Josh Norris now to talk a little bit about everything he's seen at the midpoint of the season. Josh, thank you again so much for joining us. We're at the midpoint of the minor league season. JJ and I discussed some of the top performers that we saw this past week. You did not get a chance to go out to an All-Star game due to Mother Nature. But Josh, even though you didn't see an All-Star game, you've been out and about a lot this year. And now that we have hit the All-Star break of the minor league season, it seems like a good time to go back and reflect a little bit. JJ spoke about some of the best players he saw. I talked about some of the best players I saw out West, both this last trip and previous trips. Who for you has really impressed you? You've seen a lot of South Atlantic League baseball. You've seen a lot of International League baseball. You've seen a good chunk of Carolina League baseball. At this point in the season, who are the brand name prospects who have impressed you? And then also maybe some guys who aren't the biggest names that are getting thrown around, but there's real talent there.
Let's see. Who are my favorites this year? I mean, I've only gotten to see two starts of his, but Brendan McKay was really good.
You did see him against Aaron Judge and John
Yes,
Carlos
I got
Stanton.
To see him carve up $350 million worth of major leaguer. they went 0-for-4 against him. He struck him out three times, all three on breaking balls, two looking, one swinging. In one sequence, he threw three consecutive breaking balls to Stanton and got him to swing over all three of them. And then the second sequence, it was looking curveballs on the outside corner for both of them, which was impressive because he wasn't really commanding his fastball to his arm side that day, but he still managed to send two, you know, brand name big league stars back to the bench. He's been an impressive young man. I mean, I wrote just finished a story about him, Casey Mize, Nate Pearson, and Mackenzie Gore, who I'm sure you talked about in an earlier segment of this podcast, and how they are four of the best parts of the pitching class that's coming up. Now that Tatis and Eloy and Vladdy have all graduated, and not to say nothing of Senzel and Austin Riley, probably by the time you hear this podcast, it's pitchers coming behind Wander Franco. But Brendan McKay has been very good. He's on a pretty tight pitch count lately. I mean, I think he's like 65, 70 pitches per game.
It's been about five innings per start all the way through.
Yep, and I think that's by design. I wouldn't be surprised if the Rays are in the playoffs or the playoff stretch in August, if he's up there helping make a difference. As a matter of fact, he was used behind an opener in that game, Jacob Cronenworth, who, you know, we said Brendan McKay is no Shohei Ohtani, but you got the Midwest League or the International League batting leader hitting 350 and also pitching. So maybe that's a little closer, just kind of tongue in cheek there.
In the International League.
In International League. I stubbed my speech there.
McKay's interesting because I remember on his draft night phone call, he mentioned straight up that the Twins had contacted him about being the number one overall pick. And it was a money issue, that it was, they wanted to go under slot. He wasn't willing to do that. So the Twins obviously went in another direction. This is someone who is a premium prospect, went fourth overall to the Rays, but very easily could have been the number one overall pick that draft. Was College Player of the Year here at BA. I know you've seen him and you talked to scouts about him. I've talked to scouts about him. And what's come up is, he came up as, he's going to play, be a two-way guy. He'll do both. What's come up is this is really just a pitcher, but it's a really good pitcher. We've both gotten some number two quality starters, which...
Yeah, it's the only number I've gotten is number two starter every
I've
time.
I've gotten soft two, hard three, but essentially, yes. There's at the very least, a very strong level of confidence among the consensus of evaluators. This is a front of the rotation left-hander.
Yeah, no, he's impressive. As I wrote in piece, he's not going to throw 97, 98 miles an hour. He's not going to have the 70 breaking ball to wipe you out with, but he's going to get you out. He's going to get you out a lot. And he's going to be a guy who pitches toward the mid or front of a rotation, depending on how you want to define a number two starter, for a lot of years if everything goes well. He's probably behind Gore in the best arms I've seen this year. Gore was a little different setting. It was minor league spring training. Things are a little different there, obviously facing a little worse competition than McKay is facing in International League, whether or not it's Stanton and Judge or just regular International League hitters. Another guy I went up to Trenton. I drove 11 hours up to Trenton and 12 hours back from Trenton to see Casey Mize and Matt Manning. And Mize, I got there in the third inning, but what I saw was pretty good for two and a half innings or whatever it was, two and a third, two-thirds innings. He was impressive. It's a high effort delivery with a lot of really hard stuff. I mean, fast four-seam fastball, two-seam fastball, cut fastball, split-fingered fastball, slurve. And, you know, there's no real, there's nothing real soft about it. It's hard stuff, and it's going to break all sorts of different directions. And he, up until his shoulder started barking, had been getting, had been doing very, very well. No hitter in his first start as a double A pitcher, and had like a 1.12 ERA with Erie as part of that super rotation. And, you know, his fame kind of overshadows what Matt Manning has done, which is he entered the year as the youngest pitcher in that league, and he's been one of the best pitchers in that league. On any other team without, with, you know, with not Casey Mize on his team, he'd be far more highly celebrated than he is, and that's saying a lot since he's in the top 30 prospects somewhere, which you'll see the updated version. I don't know when, but we just finished it, and it's in the magazine. I'm not sure when it's going online, but it's a complete revamp of what we had in the past, and he's, you know, way up there as far as pitchers are concerned.
Yeah, I mean, Matt Manning turned 21 this year, and he has held opponents at AA to a 184 batting average. We saw him in the Futures game last year. There was some growing stuff. He clearly was not done growing physically yet, and we've seen him make the jump. You know, everyone always says the hardest jump to make in the minors is from high A to double A on both sides of the ball, and he's made the jump without issue.
No, he's been very, very good. He's got arguably a higher ceiling than Mize, quite frankly.
What makes you say that? Because generally speaking,
other scouts who have said that.
And that's what I'm saying, but why? What about?
Because
what
makes Mize's stuff is a little harder to command, and he doesn't command it as well. Manning is athletic, young, and already has a superpower arsenal. You know, we're talking a fastball up to 98, 99, power curveball, changeup that can be pretty good at times. He's big, he's imposing, he's athletic, and he's got, you know, that big arsenal that you want to see. I mean, you're talking a possible number one with Matt Manning. He's really, really good. I don't think I saw him at his best, but when he flashed his best, there's no one on the planet who could hit it.
Certainly two guys that the Tigers will be very, very happy to have at the front of the rotation. If everything goes according to plan, we've talked about this a lot. Pitchers will break your heart. They're very risky. Injuries come up, and we've seen Casey Mize, who durability was the question, now go down with a shoulder issue.
Sure. Casey Mize, Jesus Luzardo, A.J. Puck, Michael Kopech, Dane Dunning, Nate Pearson. I mean,
and we go through it every year. The names change. The
story remains the same. We had two pitchers in the minor leagues this year who were prospects but hadn't pitched in the Trump administration, James Caprillion and Anderson Espinoza. Caprillion finally got back on the mound, but Anderson Espinoza still waiting. He might miss 4 years. He's just had his second TJ. There was a pitcher who started the other night in Tri-City who hadn't pitched since 2016. And he was a trade piece at some point. It was a Guadalupe Chavez of the Astros. I forgot he was out there, and he's back on the mound in the New York Penn League.
Once again, pitchers are very risky. So on that note, the guys you've mentioned so far that have impressed you the most have exclusively been pitchers. Anyone on the offensive side of the
Jared ball? Jared Kalanick was great in the two games I saw him. One or two games. I think it was one. But he homered. He played decent center field. He showed a mature approach at the plate. He's a competitor in every sense of the word. The man hates to lose. And I think if you want to maybe make a comparison as far as attitude is concerned, I think you're probably looking at a guy like Paul O'Neill, who was super fiery and
deep pull. I like it.
Well, I mean, you hear him a lot as a broadcaster these days, but he's as a broadcaster, he's 180 degrees from what he put out there as a player. But he was excuse the language here. He was a red ass, and I think Jared can be that too, which is a good thing if you know how to manage it and channel it into better performance. But he's moved up to Modesto, and I think he's still hitting pretty well there. So that's a guy who's been impressive on the hit side. I think Mario Feliciano at Carolina has been really good when he catches and really bad when he DHs, which is interesting.
And that does happen. I mean, we see a lot. The guys
need
to be in the
rhythm. Not quite as stark as what he's showing.
But, you know, guys need to be in the rhythm of the game. DHing is hard. You know, go have an at-bat, then sit down for two innings, sometimes three. That's not easy. I don't go get hot again and be on time with everything. When you're not in the rhythm of the game, especially as a young player, it can mess with you.
Well, in any case, you know, he's young. He's extremely athletic. He's flexible. He's whippy. He's got bat speed. And he can put a ball out to a lot of in a lot of parks, and you know I've seen him just kind of lay waste to really good fastballs. What else I like on the hit side? I mean, it's been slim pickings.
Now, when I think about, for me, a lot of the best guys I've seen this year, it has been on the pitching side. We talked about Mackenzie Gore. I talked about Josiah Gray with JJ. Chris Rodriguez with the Angels before he went down with another back surgery was super impressive.
Sam Huff has been very impressive. He hasn't quite hit for the power, the superpower that he hit at Hickory, but it would be hard to even maintain that pace. But also he's a really good defender behind home plate.
He's a good athlete for his size. He's a big boy.
He's a good athlete for a lot of people.
6'4", 230, but he runs decently. He's actually pretty good.
As a hitter, he reminds me of Peter O'Brien. I mean, light tower power, big frame, same side of the plate. Now, Peter O'Brien could not catch. Sam Huff can catch. So we're talking about a very interesting prospect.
That was interesting. Yeah.
And then I forgot guy who did not perform well in front of me, but La Pantera, Luis Robert. What a first half that young man has had.
It was great for me in the fall league last year.
As I've said on this podcast before, I saw him 2 games. He struck out 8 times in 9 at-bats, which I've seen the only 2 4 strikeout games of his career. But I don't need to curse him anymore. He's a good young player, and White Sox should be very excited about him.
Yeah, and he's, you know, the tools were always there. We see this a lot, guys come over from Cuba. There's some rust, but able to kind of figure it out after that first full year is under their belt. Yeah, I go back to, again, just some of the pitchers. When I think about who are the best players I've seen this year, Hans Kraus, Grayson Rodriguez had 2 really good outings that were impressive. It really has been a pitcher-heavy, I should say, the successful performances that have been eye-popping have been very pitcher-heavy for me this year. I know you've experienced the same. And I mean, I go back in the last few years and you saw some, you know, saw Eloy Jimenez come through. You saw, even last year, I went to the Cali and I'm watching Gavin Lux going, this guy's really freaking good and we need to get him on the 100 right now. I have not had a guy like that this year to that level.
No, I mean, we've had the guys that we've seen are on the 100. Well, Sam Huff's not, but he could be. Not to spoil anything for the midseason update. Speaking of,
Jaron Duran. He's a good player. I wouldn't go with him where I went on last year when I came back. It's like, guys, Gavin Lux banging the table. But it's interesting. And I'll be interested to see, you know, second half, weather warms up, see if the guys outside of AAA can start hitting, see some of those guys on the prospect side, the bats really start to come around. And reevaluate where everything is at the end of the year. Josh, thank you so much for joining us. Oh, you're not done? All right.
I'm not done.
Keep going.
You mentioned Kraus. I'm going to go see Kraus, Yerry Rodriguez.
Pop-up prospect in the Rangers system.
Roansy Contreras, Nolan Martinez, and Luis Medina, the enigma. And to keep off pitchers, Jonathan Ornelas with the Rangers, he'll be there. And Anthony Siegler with the Yankees will be on Charleston. So I'm going on Friday to see them for 3 games. And that should be a very interesting series on both sides. I have the Eastern League All-Star Game coming up. There's a futures game at some point. Julio Rodriguez is coming into Greensboro next week. And then there's the Appy League. And that should be fun. There's a lot of interesting guys in the Appy League. Malcolm Nunez with the Cardinals.
John Torres
with the Cardinals. Yeah, that's the name I was searching for. Rhys Hines and Tyler Callahan are with Greenville. Yoandris Gomez, my personal cheese ball as far as pitchers go, with the Pulaski Yankees. They've got Antonio Cabello as well. I wouldn't be surprised if Bobby Witt winds up with Burlington at some point. There's going to be a lot of interesting guys in there, and increasingly that's where pro scouting directors are sending their power, toward the lower levels. Even I know countless guys who are on AZL and GCL this year and are going to be in GCL, and I'm by AZL and GCL I mean extended coverage in Arizona and Florida, because obviously GCL hasn't started and AZL just did. Appy League, New York Penn League, Northwest League. You're not getting very often the big boys. You need to get in on the ground floor.
We have seen that.
And I know some organizations who are not scouting AAA.
Right. I've run into a couple as well where they've essentially said, we're only going to scout AAA, AA via MILB TV in terms of getting on the ground and seeing guys yourselves. They're saying A ball and below, and you're right. And the thought process is by the time the stud prospect is in AA or AAA, you're not getting them. And it's been interesting to see the shift and just the number of scouts you'll see at these games. For a long time, go out here to Durham, AAA, there'd be at least half dozen scouts every game. This past year, there's been games where going, there's 0, 1, 2. It's been interesting to see, and you go to the lower levels now, whether it's Greensboro for you or when I've been out in the California League, and there's easily, sometimes there's a dozen, maybe more, and I've yet to see less than 6 or 7.
Yeah, I don't know if I've gotten that many recently, but that's where it is. It's the lower levels. It's places where MILB TV doesn't touch. You're not going to see too many MILB TV AZL games, or any really, or GCL games. They can't scout that way. You can really do TrackMan or Hawkeye, as I guess is coming that way. But that's where you're going to get you're going to start plucking your lottery tickets from. And you want to get as many of those lottery tickets as possible if you're making some sort of trade where you're not going to get a top 25 prospect as a centerpiece.
And with the trade deadline coming up, that'll be interesting to see. We saw only one top 25 prospect get moved last year in Francisco Mejia, and we saw an enormous array of guys coming from the DSL.
Chris Archer, I guess that was no top 25 prospect, but that was...
Meadows and Glasnow were no longer prospects.
No.
If they were. They were previous top 25 prospects.
Yes. I mean, I've said it before and I'll say it again, they pulled a heist.
They did.
I mean, I don't understand how that happened, but it did, and the Rays had, you know, Glasnow and Meadows, and then there's Shane Baz, who's cooking in the Midwest League. What a haul. What a haul.
Certainly looking good for the Rays right now, and we'll see how everything continues to play out in the future. Josh, any final thoughts?
No, now I'm done.
All right. Well, everyone, thank you again for tuning in to another Baseball America podcast. For JJ Cooper and Josh Norris, I'm Kyle Glazer. Go ahead and check out the most recent issue of Baseball America. We'll have our midseason top 100 in there, as well as all sorts of post-draft goodness and anything and everything you could ever want. We also have a preview on where things stand. We're only just over a year out from the Olympics, so have a nice article in there too on where things stand for Team USA and what that process is looking like. And we'll continue to bring you all the good stuff. As Josh mentioned, we've got the Futures game coming up in Cleveland in a few weeks. And we'll continue to be out and about in minor leagues, bringing you the stories of all the best players. Keep it at baseballamerica.com for all the latest. Once again, for JJ and Josh, I'm Kyle Glazer. Thank you for listening, everybody.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Medela is your reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.